Addiction never affects just the addict. It affects all of us. Recovering from addiction and alcoholism is also a life-changing battle for families dealing with a loved one's addiction. Numerous programs support addicts as they reclaim their lives, while their families face their own challenges without the same guidance. You're listening to Voices in Courage with K.L. Wells, where we transform the lives of the families and loved ones of addicts and alcoholics from surviving to thriving in the midst of chaos. Tune in as we highlight vulnerable stories of families who have addicted relatives and friends and learn how they have dealt with the challenges of isolation, desperation, and shame. If you are seeking ways to live your best life, then we welcome you into this safe space. Be a part of change today with your host, K.L. Wells.
Hi, this is K.L. Wells, and thanks for joining us. I'm super excited about this interview today. I've been waiting for this one, and I know you'll enjoy it too. So we have Steve Carey with us today, and he is part of the Voices in Courage team and has been from the very beginning, and is the man behind the scenes in so many ways that keeps us all the parts and pieces going at an accelerated rate, and it keeps it all together. So, however, he's a human being walking around out in the world too. And he has his own story of his journey that I thought would be really helpful for people to have a window in a way that we kind of normally talk about people who are in the depths of addiction or the depths of alcohol and the loved one's journey through this. But what's the kind of everyday person's journey in terms of alcohol? And so I think his story is really important for all of us. And so I've invited him to share his story with us today. So welcome, Steve.
Thank you, KL. It is wonderful to be here, especially as somebody who's been, as you say, working behind the scenes, had the advantage of participating vicariously as everyone else shares their story and inspirations and all the trials and tribulations that go with that. It's really inspiring to hear those stories. And they are so powerful, and I have a ton of respect for the people who are willing to do it. I'm grateful to be here today because I have a voice, as you said, and maybe, just perhaps, what I have to share today may help somebody else out there. I think, at the very least, I am probably representative of many people out in the world who just don't talk about this type of thing. And I think this is a really positive opportunity to talk about the theme that we speak about all the time, which is shame and stigma, the topics of addiction, substance abuse disorder, and anything negative around the use of alcohol or drugs. Right. Those things are shunned.
Yes, absolutely. And so, yeah, and it's been interesting to do this journey with you while we do Voices in Courage too. So I'm going to just turn it over to you and ask you to kind of tell your story and what's been your journey to here.
Okay, I'll try to break it up into bite-sized chunks and keep it organized so it's interesting. A little bit of background about me. I am just over 50 years old. So I'm in that time of my life where a lot of things about health and well-being and my place in the universe. But one thing I've been thinking about for years, and well before you and I met, is drinking in general. And I would categorize myself historically as a social drinker. And so in the corporate workplace days during travel, there's always client meetings and you go out and have a few drinks. That was part of the journey, part of the exercise, and it was fun. I was always somebody who was thrived in those type of situations and looked forward to it from a social perspective. Another example would be if I did a presentation in front of a bunch of people or a speech or anything where there's a lot of people and I put a lot of effort into it, I'd have the massive endorphin rush and high. So I'm an extrovert by definition. I gain energy by my interactions through people. And what I discovered over time, I'd have so much energy after these events that I would have a hard time focusing. I could not focus. My mind was going too quick. It's almost like too much adrenaline. Mm-hmm. And the natural thing to do after that was, let's go out for some drinks, because that one thing accomplished so many things I was looking for. Number one, it just reduced the noise in my head. I could relax a little bit. And also it perpetuated that feeling of well-being and all the positive elements of that moment, all the emotions. it would continue that as well into the night if I continued drinking. It would not go away. So to me, that was like stacking behavior that I never really gave much thought to it, but it was just a natural way that I'll continue drinking, or an event that was followed by a dinner that had social drinking. And I'm not talking about binge drinking. I'm just talking about social drinking that could go on for hours. I would thrive in those scenarios. So I never questioned whether that was a good thing or a bad thing. I just realized like, hey, this was contributing to my professional journey. And I did not label it as negative. Not necessarily positive either, but that was just a normal everyday part of my life. And that continued for years. And so one thing that got me thinking about drinking in general was this movement that we're in January, which is Dry January. And I started doing this, I think about 10 years ago. Every January, I would stop drinking for the entire month. And that was my first real clue into what it felt like not to have a drink on a regular basis. And again, it wasn't something that I ever thought was a problem. It was just something like, hey, let's take a break. And then the first week, I really wouldn't notice much just because, hey, this is all my behaviors and habits are changing. So I'd have to adjust differently. And it was more of a, I would say, a challenge because I need to find replacements. But after about 7 days, all the positive things started to creep in. So my sleep would improve. I would feel more relaxed. I would stop. Like, I just forget that I used to drink. You know, that happened because all the automated behaviors I had that week, they kind of disappeared and I started to find a replacement for them. And then after like 3 weeks, it's like, oh, this is great. Just like focused, driven, motivated. Everything is good. And so I took that away. It's like, there's something powerful and useful. And then February would come and I would always have this debate, like, do I really want to drink or not? Right there was the seed. That one thought said, do I really want to have a drink or not? I had that every February when I did this, and I didn't realize how powerful that would be. And I'll come back to that in a few minutes, because what typically happened after that is I would have a drink, and then like 2 weeks later, life would go on, and I would slowly revert back to the way things always were. Then vacations would come up in summers, and you go somewhere, it's sunny, and you're on the beach, and you're having drinks in daytime, and so on. And then by the end of the year, holidays, I'm like, I'm tired of this. Let's change again, and we're back to January. So that was a loop. Really had some powerful insights every January, and it stuck with me. And as I got older, I really started thinking about this more deeply. And I had this question nagging me in the back of my mind, which was, do I really want to drink? And that would come up every so often. And it was usually just a result of I'd have a drink. I'm like, what am I getting out of this?
Yeah.
And it was usually during a vacation or after a time where I've been having a drink every day. And like, it was that incremental drink, like really didn't do anything for me. So I'd question like, why am I doing this? And so that combined with that question I asked myself in that first of February, do I really want this drink? Those started kind of getting at me. And then just the effects of aging, you metabolize and handle alcohol differently. And that was my case. As I got older, how I handled drinking changed and my body didn't really like it. I never suffered from headaches, hangovers, the traditional hangovers. Of course, I've had those, but that wasn't like a thing I dealt with. There was a insidious little hangover type symptom that I did not associate with drinking until I started doing some research. And that symptom was depression, anxiety, increased stress, that kind of big bucket of negative emotions.
Yeah.
And those are killers for me because I'm highly optimistic. I like to be around optimistic people, seek out those interactions in life. So when I would be by myself and I had this mood set in, because it wasn't like the night before I had a big event. It was like maybe last weekend, I went somewhere and I had a bunch of drinks over the course of 3 days, but now it's Wednesday. Why on Wednesday am I feeling low or down? Feelings of well-being are not there. And I'm just anxious.
Yeah. And do you remember like when you first like started to pay attention to that or recognize it?
I do not.
Okay.
It happened off and on throughout the years. But I'll tell you this for sure. I wasn't paying attention to these things before taking off January's. Again, that was 10 years ago. So I would say in the last 5 years, I really started to examine it differently. And then for me, at least, once I start looking into it, I dig back in my history and just start to examine events. So I start to make some associations and say, okay, I didn't enjoy work at that time. What was happening? Well, work was stressful. What else was I doing? Okay, I was self-medicating because we had to let a bunch of people go from work, something like that. So I started making reverse associations. But let's say to answer your question, within the last 5 years, it became a predominant theme in my awareness.
Okay.
And certainly within the last 3 years, because I do remember having a conversation during my anniversary with my wife. At that time, it was, I forget how many years. We're past 20 now. So it was like 3 years ago. And we had this discussion during that night. And I had this idea, like, you know what? I'm not sure if I want to drink anymore. And so that was a topic. So I do recall that vividly. So let me get back to some of the more concrete points that I investigated recently. So I'll come back to is during October, September of last year, I had this moment and I had this decision. It was really easy. And I'll explain why that is. But I had this decision where I said, you know what? I'm not going to stop drinking black and white, but I'm going to stop drinking like 95%. And that's the new rule that I kind of set up for myself that clicked. And it was really easy. And what happened is I did some research and I learned a bunch of things about the physiology of the body and also the brain, how alcohol affects your body and brain. I found some real concrete evidence and I'll tell you who I learned it from. The gentleman's name, he has a podcast and his name is Andrew Huberman. He has a podcast called The Huberman Lab. And if anybody would like to look at this, the episode is number 86, What Alcohol Does to Your Body and Health. And I listened to this one day as walking my dog. They're long podcasts, so it's probably over the course of several days. But there's a few things that really stood out to me because they described my symptoms exactly. When you drink, and he makes this distinction about drinking, you can be a casual drinker, 1 to 2 drinks a night, or you can be a binge drinker and have drinks on a weekend. What that does to your body is the same. So the person who imbibes heavily on a weekend, but doesn't do anything else that week, let's say they just go out and they have a huge bender and they're 12 drinks on a weekend. Mm-hmm. The result on your body's physiologically and your mental health is very similar from his research of somebody who enjoys drinking 2 drinks every night.
Wow. I did not know that.
I did not either.
Wow.
So that was a kind of a huge knock on the head for me, which was, okay, I put myself in the category. My self-identity was a social drinker. And I realized like, okay, I'm doing something that's contributing to body's health. So let's go find out what that is. But that was the base of his argument. And he wasn't trying to convince people not to drink. He's just saying, here's what the science reveals. Mm-hmm. Because he's a PhD professor, studies this stuff. What I paid attention to was something that really was strong in my mind, which I alluded to earlier, which was I would feel higher levels of anxiety, stress, and depression. Things are out of character for my default level of personality and state of being. And I hated it because I'm pretty ambitious too. So if I was on a Wednesday after a big weekend and I'm not motivated and I don't feel I can accomplish the things that my ambitions lead me to on finishing my projects, that really bothered me. And that would fuel further like sense of anxiety. But what I learned from Huberman Lab podcast is that when you drink, a couple things happen. It increases your cortisol. And I don't want to restate what the scientists do because I'm not a scientist. Paid attention to this. It increases your overall baseline levels of cortisol and other stress hormones.
Yes.
And that happens when you're drinking, but it also happens when you're not drinking. So a couple things happen. When you're not drinking, your baseline stress and anxiety are higher. That's when you're not drinking. And you're prone for diminished mood or sense of well-being when you're not drinking. Because your baseline levels of your body chemistry are lower, dopamine and all those other things,
right?
Your baseline's lower. So just to get back to your baseline, you want to have some drinks to get back there. So I realized right there, that was the moment that said, okay, I didn't know any of this. And I realized like I'm contributing to this by casual drinking. If I've already had this idea that I don't want to drink, the perfect storm of saying, don't do it. But then I had this thing, which is, I don't like black and white choices. Just stop drinking. That sets me up for failure because I'm going to have a drink sometime. Then I haven't accomplished my goal. So I gave myself a loophole. And that is, I'm going to remove 95% of drinking from my life. And that worked for me because now I'm satisfying it. Because I can handle the outcomes of drinking, at least what I'm finding, it doesn't contribute to the way my body's health that it used to. My moods are elevated. I feel really good 99% of the time now. So now when I do drink, it's highly intentional. It's a choice-driven exercise.
Right.
And I'm accepting of the results and the consequences, but mainly I'm making a very intentional decision beforehand. So that's led to all sorts of other outcomes as well. Or as you reflect backwards, you realize like so much of your previous behavior was reflexive based off of habit and ritual. So it hasn't been that difficult to remove it because so much of it was based off of habit and ritual. But the science gave me something really powerful to latch onto. Part of the habit and ritual was after a long day or difficult anything, let's go have a drink because that's going to make you feel better. And now I knew that the reason I was feeling it was a difficult day to begin with was probably because of other stressors and anxiety. And I knew that drinking wasn't going to solve it beforehand. I was like, hey, this is going to make me feel relaxed. But I didn't attach the consequences of the next day of I would go right back to the anxiety and stress of the previous day. I'm not only deferring it till later, I'm compounding it if I drink for that reason. So I have a very profound and strong reason not to drink in those moments. Like, let's go address why you're feeling stressed or it was a difficult day, but find a different reason, manage that. And then if you do want to drink at that point, you could. I tend to look at it now as like, let's not use those reasons, those situations to find a drink because it doesn't help serve me. But if I am going to have a drink, let's have those moments be ones I'm going to be really enjoying it. Those are moments when I actually like it and I don't want to give those up, like having really good wine with dinner or after I go mountain biking, I like to have a beer. It's like the most refreshing thing in the world. I'm going to do that. And I feel really good about those situations. So that's how I came to this new framework. And I wanted to share it in this interview. I think there are so many people just like me. Well, a couple of things I'll categorize. A, you're just a social drinker and it's accepted and you don't really think much about what the impact is. But I think the bigger thing is drinking's okay to talk about when it's associated with positive things in life, like social drinking, football games, all the other things. As soon as it crosses that line where it might be a problem, we shut up. Do not talk about it. For me, I think it's a razor's edge, whether it was a problem or not. And if I had something bad happen in my life, I would probably fall right over the edge to the bad side where I would probably self-medicate. I know I have in the past during stressful times. So imagine if something really difficult happened. I can imagine it'd be so easy for me to fall in that direction. And then as I realize it compounds, that the challenges compound. So you just want to continue the drinking the next day. So 2 drinks a day could easily turn into 3, could turn into 4. And there's really no stopping that. And I don't look at myself as any different. I just have the benefit of those bad things. They did happen and I handled them differently, adjustments. The really bad things didn't happen. So I look at myself as more of a lucky survivor versus somebody who has superior control and willpower.
Yeah. And so one of the things that I hearing you say, Steve, and that kind of catches my attention, just this nagging question that just kind of kept rearing its head and then eventually led to, okay, I need to do some research on this. And now, gathering information doesn't necessarily mean you're going to make a change. And a lot of people know they shouldn't smoke cigarettes, but they still do, even though they know it causes cancer. But it's interesting that you gathered the information and it informed and influenced your ability to kind of look back in retrospect and see what actually was happening for me when I'm a naturally positive guy. And for me to feel lower, depressed, and anxiety ridden is just not my natural state of being. So what's the one thing that's in my life that might actually contribute to that? And then I guess the other thing is to think about it through the lens. And of course, this is how I think about things is this a coping strategy. And there are so many more coping strategies for stress, depression, anxiety. And culturally, it's just easy. And we've been kind of enculturated to grab a beer or grab a glass of wine or grab something along those lines. But as you kind of brilliantly said, actually, when life really shows up and knocks you right on your ass big time, if your only habit of strategy in handling stress and anxiety is to grab a drink, you're kind of primed already, so to speak, to go down that rabbit hole. And so just if you expand your skill set, and there's so many more things that we all know we can do, or if we don't, learn what we can do in order to be able to navigate our own stress, our own anxiety, and potentially depression. And we can actually be at agency for what we create in our lives. So
that is correct. And I've learned a few of these from you just through our regular conversations about you do have choice. And that's one of the lessons that was in my mind, probably at a subconscious level. But when I was thinking about this big idea, do I want to drink or not? Behind the scenes was, I'm in control here. The choice is mine. So am I going to make a decision, or either way is a decision, right?
Yes.
So the decision to continue as is, or am I going to make an adjustment? I like the idea of looking at it as an adjustment, because I think these, going back to this big question, I'm going to stop drinking or not, that if you're on the wagon or you're not, I felt like I was setting myself up to fail.
Yeah.
I really want to make this adjustment and a choice to say, here's a path that can lead me to success. And I also have every confidence that as you go through it, the benefits would stack and compound, make that decision easier over time. But again, that was that idea that you start with a decision and move in a different direction and do that research. Another thing I think that helped me is that I have this identity. So one of them is that of my personality, which is I'm optimistic and positive mindset. That's a very strong self-identity that I carry. Didn't feel that way. It was in clash. So that was a grounding thing. Other identities I have that contributed to making the choice easier, which is I'm super active. I consider myself an athlete and I do things that athletes do. And so this was a decision that leaned into that direction. And I have this crazy goal. I did not make up this term. I'll come back to who did in a minute, but it's participate in the centenarian Olympics, which is be able to do some type of Olympic event when you're 100.
Cool.
And in order to do that, if you want to do something physical at the age of 100, you have to train when you're 90. But if you want to be able to participate in those events at age 90, you have to train at 80 and so on. So training now, rest of my life.
Right.
And it's something that I've got my routines baked in. I do a lot of different things. And that identity of being a somebody who's going to be healthy at age 80 or 70, a big part of this decision, because now it's an investment in that future version of me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's such a great thing to bring up, is that you have an identity of who you are. That is, and you've lived it for so long that when you're out of your identity, it's like, what's going on? And then the other thing relative to being a Olympian is this aspirational compelling that inspires you to want to do the things that you would do in order to prepare for something like that. And so this whole notion of a compelling vision, I think, is very powerful too, that has really great energy behind it. Because when we do those kinds of things, nothing's going to throw us off our, when the challenges show up, we're still going to figure it out because we know where we're headed in terms of the compelling vision.
Right. And the other thing about identities, and this is something that I implemented more recently as opposed to months ago when I made this decision, but this is a reinforcement one. When I introduced myself earlier, I talked about I've always been a social drinker, and that was a subconscious identity. It wasn't like a badge I put on myself, but behaviorally I did, because I was always willing to go out and socialize. So I actually did have that badge. I changed it, or I wrote this down. So instead of where I was, I used to be, I categorized myself as a social drinker. Now somebody who seldom drinks. That's my identity forming. That's new. And even when I'm talking to somebody I just met, I'm trying to avoid telling them this story. If it's something that to do with drinking, my way of talking about it is I seldom drink. And that's a new type of identity that I'm, it's like putting on a new outfit. I've been putting that on recently. It really helps form this idea of who I am and how I behave and the years I engage in, because again, it makes all the decisions much, much easier. And they turn into, they're kind of like habits because they're repeated behaviors. So that's one thing I've done. And it just helps me to think about how I introduce myself or how I think about myself. But it definitely changes my self-perception.
Yes, most definitely. I mean, there's two things that you've said here that are really powerful. One is intention, being choiceful and awake to make the choices that are an intentional reflection of your identity. And so you've chosen to adjust your identity based on who you want to be in the world and what you've learned and what it is you aspire to create at 100 years old. And so that is the power of being a human being, is we get to change. And that's life. I mean, life shows up and there are moments when we have a choice, whether we continue doing the same old thought patterns and the same old behavior patterns, or whether we actually consciously, intentionally make a decision to move to that next best version of who we want to be.
That's right. And then all of the affirming feelings and emotions, and also physical senses of how you spend your time. Right, we only spend time in the present moment. So how I feel right now at any given moment is state. More and more, I'm feeling really good as a result. And so just being aware of that, those are things that, again, they compound.
Absolutely. Well, I haven't been a drinker for a long time, and I can't even tell you when I stopped drinking. And I don't remember a decision about stopping drinking. But what I can say is, it's just not a part of my identity. And I'm similar to you. I didn't have the gene or whatever it was in terms of alcoholism, or I chose other ways of handling my childhood trauma and handling the stress in my life and the anxiety and moments throughout the course of my life when I was depressed. And so it just isn't a thing. So what I am curious about, because I have faced this myself through the course of the last, I don't know, 10, 20 years, is, are your friends showing up any different now that you've changed?
For the most part, no. And I attribute that to a couple things. One, I think it's, I have good friends. I think the bigger answer, though, because there's a lot of friends I've known since high school.
Right.
And all of our shared experiences are around having some friends.
Yeah.
But we're all aging and we're all going through similar body transitions where we don't handle it the same way.
And right.
The one thing I've discovered is, as I've shared this story selectively with people who have shown interest to hear about it, it's kind of like working out. Not everybody wants to hear about working out and stuff like that, but if they show interest, we'll talk about it. But I'm discovering that more and more people have that affirmation where they say, me too, I no longer can do this. And they usually haven't looked into it the level I have, just because I kind of went down the rabbit hole, but they'll readily admit that I can't handle, I can't process, my body doesn't agree with it in the same way. And it's usually a welcome conversation because it validates something that they've been thinking about, but maybe haven't shared externally. That goes back to the motivation of wanting to share this with a broader audience, is I think there are so many people who have been like me and just, again, if it's a problem, talk about it. Or if it's perceived as a problem, right away, if you say, I'm stopped drinking, if you don't accompany that with, I'm getting in shape and I'm turning over a new leaf, and by the way, I'm going to stop drinking, that's like a yay, good for you celebration. If it's a, I just decided to stop drinking, there's a shadow of doubt that goes with that proclamation that says, oh, what's really going on at home? And so it's overtones of shame and stigma, even with the idea of no longer drinking. And that is like, oh, there's a problem. I've sensed that in discussions with people, just reluctance to talk about stopping or severely moderating because it implies there's a problem. I'll share a story that just happened in the last week. I had a family member reach out to me. They were asking about that podcast that I referenced earlier. Hey, Steve, can you send a link to the podcast that really influenced and changed how you thought about drinking? That was basically what they said. Then they said, it's for my friend. She's shown some interest in it and I sense she might be struggling. And that right there, a conversation, struggling on the context of drinking implies a problem. And then it was just hush. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So that conversation, even though there isn't a problem, but just the idea that there could be, now we're having private conversations, it's confidential, and we're not talking about it openly.
Right.
And so I want to lead by example, just like so many other people are, but in my community of friends and people I know, very open about it and saying it could have been a problem. Hell yes. Mm-hmm. There's a short distance of where I was to maybe it could have been, but let's talk about it with the, in the absence of a problem, let's have open discussion.
Right.
And I think that's very difficult for people. I haven't had any issues with anybody in my circles challenging the idea. I haven't had any pressure or negative feedback or peer pressure to continue drinking. That, I think we live in a time where that pressure, at least in my groups, have gone away.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know that there are probably other people that may not have the depth of relationships that you might, but certainly over time, I mean, I've had people that I've known for a long time. And on the front end, we're, what? You don't want to have a drink? And I'm like, nope, I'm good. And they're like, ah, come on. Yeah. And it was, so they'd feel okay. And I was like, nope, I'm good. Don't feel compelled. Don't want to do it. And sometimes on a couple trips, I would be the only quote sober person in the room. And I woke up the next morning ready to rock and roll.
That's right.
And that's who I wanted to. So this, all of this is informative and helpful to have conversations, to open up the conversations about, do I want to drink? How does this serve me? If I want to adjust and minimize how much I'm drinking. Okay. But the shame, the stigma, the judgment that is attached to drinking in particular is pervasive. So, and I'm not sure that people are conscious as to why. So I think just by being bold enough to bring up a conversation around alcohol, whatever, and as much as possible, just kind of drop the judgment around it. It's more like curiosity. And does this serve me or not serve me? And figuring that out just in the course of being a human being, I think is super helpful.
I think curiosity is an excellent way to frame it, and it's a safe way to frame it. We'll share one more story. And this was the end of last summer where I went away on a 3-day weekend out to the beach, lots of friends. And I was one of the people who was drinking. And so I was not ready to go the next morning. There was an individual at that event, and he was a friend of a friend, but same age cohort, everything. And he did not drink. And it was interesting because when the topic first came up, well, we don't know why he stopped. So there's a question mark.
Right.
And I had an opportunity to drive with him. We went mountain biking and we rode in a car together. And I was curious at the time. I was thinking about it on that day. And the story behind it was very similar, almost exact to the story I'm sharing today, which I just got tired of it after the holidays that I didn't drink in January. But in his version of that, he's like, well, let's just extend it for another month. February came up and then March. And he's like, you know what? I'm just going to stick with not drinking. And that was his version. That was his story. And I was really appreciative of him sharing that because it was somebody that I identified with in every level. He was an athlete. He was super fit, go do anything he wanted to. So I was like, this is a cool guy I want to hang out with. But his story was empowering, but also as I reflected later on, I first approached it was from the point of view of why did he stop? Was something wrong? That was, I even had that bias going in. So then I discovered the other way around. So I think approaching it from a point of curiosity is a really good way. And most people who have gone through it, I think are going to share their journey because it's an interesting one and it's still not talked about. So that was a really empowering and informative point of view for me. It helped me get to the point where I was today.
Yeah. Well, I think this notion of curiosity is very powerful. And because it allows for us to explore people's decisions and thoughts, and it drops the judgment. If you can just show up in a genuinely curious way, then you just want to understand what's the thinking, what's the information. And I'm immensely curious about people. I want to know, like, what was the thinking that helped you make that decision? What information did you get in order to make that decision? And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to have this conversation today is because we're all evolving and your evolution and your own journey around your experience with alcohol is, I think, in so many ways, the journey of a lot of people. And so I'm very grateful for you sharing this today.
Well, thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk about it. I guess, as you said, I'm not unique in this. I'm one of hundreds of thousands of people out there. I know in my immediate friends group, I think it's something that's probably pretty consistent too. I can only imagine as you extend that group out further, there's many people who are thinking about how does this serve me? Do I want to drink? I want to have a drink. And yet back to curiosity, I've often had this phrase in my mind of chasing curiosity wherever it leads me. I know it's not original to me, but that's one I hooked onto when I heard it a while ago. And I love that idea. And it opens up to explore ideas without any sense of judgment or bias.
Right. Yeah. And in so many ways, in order to really work our way through this individually and collectively, chasing curiosity, which I really like that one too, is, I think, mission critical, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So as we wrap this up, is there anything else that you'd like to share? And then how could people get a hold of you if, in fact, they're kind of in this space and maybe they don't have somebody that they feel safe to have this conversation with? They do feel there's too much judgment around this in their circles. And
well, a few things. One thing I'll add on that I talked about earlier, but I think it's important. If you're in the category like I am, where you gain energy in social situations, you're extrovert. It doesn't have to be an extrovert, but there's another couple of buckets that people fall in that I learned about with alcohol and how it affects you. For many people, it sedates them. They get tired. It's time to go to sleep. And then the other bucket is you're not sedated. Your alertness levels go up and energy, maybe not energy is the right word, but you're not going to bed and maybe a life of party. That's me. And if you're in that situation, that's going to be a factor in this. It's probably even contributing more. You're going to allow yourself to drink more things. So that's another little warning bell that went off in my mind. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, Steve, you got to... You've been lucky so far. But if you're having these discussions in your mind, the platform that we've built together, reach out to us on our website. And by the time this podcast is out, we'll have a place where people can just click on a button and talk to us, where you can type in a message, talk, just share your voice, or if you want to leave a video message, you can, but we'll answer you. And this is a safe place by definition. It's who mm-hmm. we serve. It's no judgment, and you're not alone. And I would extend it out personally as well if you want to have that discussion with me. And I'm happy to do so. And if you want to reach out to me in general or see what I'm doing, I have a platform I just launched at the end of last year. It's called thestevecast.com. So T-H-E-S-T-E-V-E, cast, like podcast. And what I'm doing there is I'm just sharing 5 minutes of motivation in my newsletter where I share all sorts of like technical things and video stuff, marketing, how to do X, but it's really distilled down to what can you do in 5 minutes? If you're a lifelong learner mm-hmm. and want to enjoy something you can do, but don't want to be distracted, my goal is to share, here's something new you can do, but here's something practical you can do it with and make use of it. So you're not getting distracted by these shiny objects, but you right. can take tools and turn them into a process. So that's where mm-hmm. I'm going with that. But I think it's more important that if you have this type of conversation in your mind, find us at voicesencourage.com and talk mm-hmm. to us, and we will listen.
Yes. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the day when, pretty soon, where people can just do their thing, just like you said, in terms of reaching out to us and asking questions and touching base and in a safe place. So again, thank you. I'm looking forward to next year revisiting this with you and finding out what you've kind of learned along the way and what your journey has revealed to you, because it's an unfolding journey. And what you know today is not what you're going to know a year from now. And so I think it's really helpful for us to share our journeys and the unfolding of them. So again, thank you. And thank you to our audience. So everybody be well, take care. We're here for you. We love you. Bye-bye.
Addiction never affects just the addict. It affects all of us. Recovering from addiction and alcoholism is also a life-changing battle for families dealing with a loved one's addiction. Numerous programs support addicts as they reclaim their lives, while their families face their own challenges without the same guidance. You're listening to Voices in Courage with K.L. Wells, where we transform the lives of the families and loved ones of addicts and alcoholics from surviving to thriving in the midst of chaos. Tune in as we highlight vulnerable stories of families who have addicted relatives and friends and learn how they have dealt with the challenges of isolation, desperation, and shame. If you are seeking ways to live your best life, then we welcome you into this safe space. Be a part of change today with your host, K.L. Wells.